Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your Wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, and welcome to the Wealth DNA radio show. Today, September 12th. It's 8 a.m. in Phoenix, Arizona, and the usual, it is sunny. Yesterday was a bit of a cloudy day, and as you would know, it was Sunday, and it was 9/11, 10th anniversary of the attacks on New York City, Washington, D.C., and targeted somewhere in Pennsylvania. That plane didn't make it. Four passenger planes being used as weapons to attack the U.S. A solemn day to remember those 3,000 innocent people that lost their lives, and to remember the families and the survivors. Their lives and ours were changed forever that day. Yesterday, many people shared their recollections of where they were and how they felt and how those events unfolded and how they felt about it. I was living in Budapest at the time, so a lot different than most of the stories I heard yesterday. I had left corporate life earlier that year and a few months before had just moved to a new home near the city, which would double as what would become the first office of what is now BI Solutions Corp. That sunny afternoon, we took a ride in our red Alfa Romeo we were leasing at the time, hadn't bought a car yet, and went to the IKEA store in the suburbs to start shopping for desks, lamps, chairs, etc. Now, notice I said afternoon, 6-hour time difference, so we had half of our day underway before anything even started in New York City. Well, when we returned around 3 p.m., our German neighbor came out frantically saying we needed to turn on the TV, the Fernseher. Gucken, was ist los in New York City. Some bombs had hit New York City, as she described it. It's a bit of a shock and also a bit of a challenge. I'm not a big fan of TV. And most of the programming was in Hungarian, so I had neither unpacked the TV nor checked if the cable connection even worked. So I did not have even a TV to watch. Well, after about 30, 40 minutes, I got the TV working. My wife and I saw the live footage of the building engulfed and collapsing. Wow. I hope you had a moment of silence yesterday to recall those events 10 years ago. Recall those next few days in 2001. The U.S. markets were closed and foreign markets were dropping. Uncertainty and fear were rampant. Security in all major American buildings and companies was tight. A lot of American companies were taking the signs down in the buildings so people didn't know that their company was there. Yeah, that was 10 years ago. Let's fast forward now 10 years to recent events. Let me remind you, you're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and I look forward to joining us every second and fourth Monday. If you'd like to get an email reminder, what you need to do is just send an email to ron@wealthdna.us or just also up in the upper left-hand side, there's a little follow button underneath the Boomer and the Babe picture. Very, very far up in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see the Boomer and the Babe. Just click that follow button. They will keep you informed of the great shows on this network. Also, we're switching over to eye contact. So if you didn't receive a colorful announcement, well, then you probably didn't opt into our invitation when we sent it out, or you weren't on that list. So please send me an email at ron@wealthdna.us that you'd like to be on that list, and we'll keep you posted. We'll keep you informed of when the next shows are. And if you find that invitation, just go ahead and opt in. That's the other way to do it. Now, for those of you who invest in the financial markets, which, by the way, you should be doing with at least a portion of your portfolio, you've noticed that volatility continues to plague us. We thought there was panic in the streets back 10 years ago. Well, it seems to be returning, doesn't it? Deja vu all over again. you can tell the market's been volatile when in the last week we experienced a 3% drop and a 3% rise all in a day each, and it starts to seem pretty normal. I guess after 4 and 5% drops and rises, 3% now seems normal, but it is not. Let me put a 3% daily change in perspective. There's about 240 trading days per year, about 60 per month. 60 per quarter, sorry, I track it that way. So a 3% rise per day would be a 720% annualized return. But wait, 720% would be huge. But when you do the compounding and that daily increase of 3%, your portfolio would actually go up, you ready for this, 120,300%. Yes, you heard that right. 720% annually would be a compounded, when compounded daily, is 120,300%. I guess you're predicting we'll be talking about the power of compounding in the next few shows, and you're right. So if you started with, let's go take that example, just $100. You started with $100 in the stock market, and after 1 year of 240 trading days, 3% increases a day, you would have $120,485. So over $120,000 in just 1 year. Now, I really said $120,485 if we had 240 days of 3% increases. So that should help you realize that a 3% increase in a single day is huge. It's not normal. And you may also realize why I recommend everyone should have some exposure to the equity markets. You will not see those swings anywhere else. But there is the other side of the coin, and let's take a look at it. What if the market dropped 3% per day? Well, if you started with that $100, after 1 year, 240 trading days, you would be left with 7 cents. Now, how about if it were just a 3-month period? Because that's an awful long period. 3-month period, that's 3% down per day. You'd lose 84% of your portfolio in that one quarter. Or in just 60 trading days, you lose 84% of your money. Now, non-investors who've never done this math and seen it in action might say, well, that's not too bad because all you need is another 60 up trading days of 3% and you'll be back to where you started. Well, experienced investors and mathematicians know that's not true. In reality, you need 62 trading days being up 3% to recover. Why? Why down 60 and up 62? Use this simple example. More dramatic. Say the market goes down just once, 50%. Well, that does happen. We experienced it in 2007 and 2008. Your $100 goes down to $50. Now, if you get a plus 50% return, that $50 only goes to $75. You see, losses really hurt. And that simple example helps explain Warren Buffett's rule number one of investing. Do you know that rule? Well, rule number one is don't lose money. Very simple, huh? When you lose money, it's far harder to recover than it was to lose it. As I often say, any investor can lose money regularly, and most do. It takes skill to earn money regularly. One of my objectives in doing this show, not just today's, but every couple weeks, is to provide that skill. And my personal goal is to help 1 million people become millionaires during my lifetime. I hope you'll be one of them. And if you're already a millionaire, let's get you to 50 or 100 million. If we did a survey of our listeners right now and ask one simple question, what is risk? I can predict we'll get at least 10 answers, all of them valid. Hey, well, why not? You know what? We welcome phone calls and chat messages during this show. So why not take that question, what is risk? Either send us a chat message or call in and give me your answer. There's a lot of answers that are right. Now, how do you do that? Well, there's a chat area underneath the radio player there. Or you can call in 917-388-4162. Let me repeat, that's 917-388-4162. And there will be a little bit of delay from the time you call to the time we know about it, because there is a little lag between the actual conversation and what you're hearing. Today, we'll be revealing the second commandment of investing and tying that into this topic of risk, which is one of the key issues the second commandment addresses. So feel free to call in or type in an answer. What is risk, or what is risk to you? We're talking about the financial markets now. Well, let me give you some of the answers I'm likely to get. I see one from Tim. I think it's an excuse not to invest. Hey, I like that. Hold that thought, Tim. My very last couple points might just address that one. So that's a good one. It's an excuse not to invest. Well, another one I'm expecting to see is the risk of losing money. That's true. But on the other hand, there's a chance you make more than you expected. It's also a risk. It's a risk you get a different return, higher or lower. How about currency risk? We don't think about that as much in this country, but because we've been such a major piece of the world and dollar is kind of the main currency, or it has been so far. But a foreign stock might do well in its base currency, but when you translate that gain into the currency you invested in, for American investors, that'd be dollars, the return could be far different. Could be higher or lower. So you bought some stocks in the Singapore market. They do extremely well, and if the Singapore dollar devalued against the U.S. dollar, guess what happens? Your returns aren't as good. Could be the other way, of course. It could be higher or lower. Interest rate risk. Now, if you're investing in bonds or in T-bills, and let's say you're investing in a T-bill paying you 2%, and interest rates rise, what happens to your principal and your return? Well, it goes down. So interest rate risk is another one. Any more suggestions in our chats here? We're going to run through my list, and there's probably more. I probably go through almost 10 of them here. Liquidity risk. When you try selling and you can't, just like 10 years ago. And that's why I mentioned it. The market was closed. You couldn't sell a stock. And by the way, real estate investors and homeowners also now understand that risk. You can't just sell a house the next day, and you probably aren't going to get anywhere close to what you paid for it. So that risk is both liquidity and the safety of your investment. It can't go down. Inflation risk. Remember that 2% T-bill we just mentioned? What would happen if you're in 6% inflation, which, by the way, we are? That 2% return looks pretty awful. How about tax rate risk? I don't think about that one too much. But if you bought an investment that had a certain tax treatment, capital gains or favorable tax treatment because it's tax-free in your state or in the country, and that tax law changes or the tax rate changes. But that never happens in either the U.S. or any other country, does it? Yep, there's tax rate risk. How about allocation risk? You put money, more of your money into stocks, and they underperformed cash, bonds, and commodities, just like the last few months. Well, there's an allocation risk. How about manager risk? You're not the greatest investor, so you picked a great guru to run your fund. He's been earning his investors 12%. And then one day you're watching TV and you see Bernie being arrested for running a Ponzi scheme. Yep. And Bernie was your guru. That's a manager risk. He didn't do as well as you thought or as he advertised or promised. Now, here's my favorite to Tim's point. Tim said, I think it's an excuse not to invest. Well, my favorite is the risk of not investing. Imagine you decided not to invest after 2008. You saw that 50% drop. You put your money in the mattress, and the market rises 100%. How'd your mattress do? Well, this happened. 2009 through early 2011, you made 100% return. The possibility of a loss from John is exactly right, and that's the one I was getting at when I say the risk of losing money. Now, there is an official definition. But before I share that, let me share one more of my favorites. There's the risk of not listening to this show twice a month. How's that, guys? You get the idea. All good answers. You could lose money. Interest rates could change, inflation, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? All good answers. Now, if you research the topic, there is an official definition of investment risk. Most people don't understand that. It is purely volatility. And all of those things we talked about, the market going up or down, and therefore you lose money, currencies going up or down, interest rates going up or down, liquidity isn't necessarily an up or down. It's either yes, no, or really poor. And liquidity in the markets 10 years ago was off. It was the market was closed. 2008, when the banks were in huge trouble, nobody was buying anything, and it was very hard to even value some of those securities. That's liquidity risk. But most of these things just are fluctuations, variances, volatility. And it's also measured by standard deviation and variance. A month ago, I mentioned the VIX. That's an index that's officially used to measure volatility. And there's a couple of them, short-term, long-term, etc. Risk, by the way, can work for you or can work against you. That depends on how you deal with it. That's what the show is about. I often tell people it's far riskier to not invest than to invest. If you don't invest, you have virtually no chance of becoming wealthy. About your only hope is you could win a lottery or maybe go to the casinos, Atlantic City or some of the Indian casinos or, of course, the city of lost wages. But you still have to invest a buck or more to do that. You could inherit the money, or you could marry a rich person. That's not necessarily easy to do. But those are ways, if you don't invest, to become wealthy. Good luck. Anyway, I don't believe, my personal opinion, that you can really become truly wealthy just by having a high-paying job. And we hear a lot about those. Let me take an example. How about athletes and actors? How many of them do we hear about making a ton of money and losing it all because it wasn't invested wisely? Or they gave it to Bernie to invest and he squandered it, turned it into a Ponzi scheme. Now, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. Today, we reveal the second commandment of investing. Now, do you really want to be truly wealthy? Do you really have that true desire? Why do I use the word desire? That's the D in DNA. Remember the DNA framework, Wealth DNA, the name of the radio show. That's the D, desire. Well, you need to answer that question before you really can do it. I use the analogy of losing weight. If you're really not convinced you want to lose weight, you won't. Because you won't go through the sacrifices to get there. And by the way, becoming wealthy takes more discipline and more time than losing weight. The second commandment is very simple. It's simply, know thyself. Now, why is it some people look good in gray suits? Others look good in navy blue or pinstripes? I've tried on a lot of different suits with square patterns and plaids and decided I don't look good in them, so I don't even try them on anymore. Some men prefer belts, others suspenders. By the way, there are the ultra-cautious, often accountants, have been known to wear both, belt and suspenders. That's cautious. Now, is there a right look for all people? Or is there at least the right look in a given setting? Well, clearly jeans wouldn't be appropriate at a gala event, and a tuxedo might look a little goofy at a rock concert. But it would also look very strange if we all showed up to a party dressed exactly the same. The women I know would be horrified if even one other woman showed up wearing the same outfit. Now, I bring up this simple analogy because it's an analogy to investing. It doesn't make sense to ask a financial advisor what the best investment is for you if that advisor doesn't already know a lot about you. Now, if a financial advisor is kind of the flip side of a financial advisor or broker says, this is the investment you really need to get into, my advice, you shouldn't, unless you've shared enough about four things: your investment goals, your time horizon, your current portfolio, and your risk preferences. Without those, they really don't know what's good for you. They just know what they want you to buy. It's probably good for them. These four topics, by the way, are the key topics that we address in getting to know thyself. Although each of these topics is equally important, I always think that the last one, your risk preferences, is more equal than the rest. You'll find out that we'll be talking about the Ten Commandments on this show, and we'll be revealing the rest of them. And each of these topics will also be talked about in more detail in other shows, your investment goals, your time horizon, current portfolio, and risk preferences. But let me give you a snapshot of each of them. And hopefully, as you hear these, you start to get to know thyself. First of all, investment goals. We'll probably dedicate at least one more show to this topic all by itself. We'll talk about goal setting, your net worth, and your IGAs. That's not the grocery chain. That's income-generating assets. You see, if your goal is to have sufficient funds for kind of a comfortable retirement or to send your 12 kids to the best private college, the type of investment will be different than if your goal is to save 20,000 euro 2 years from now to buy a new car. If you're not sure why you're investing, it's kind of like going on vacation and not knowing where you're going. I have some simple advice. Any road will get you there. And also, if you say, I want the maximum amount I can earn, that doesn't add much value to the goal definition. That just tells you that a low return investment is probably not the one for you, which is about as useful as saying, I don't like driving slowly when I travel. It's not a very exact term. It doesn't really guide you or help you much. What is important is how you plan to use the money. And just as important, what trade-offs in current spending you're willing to make to reach that goal. If that goal is a 20,000 euro car a couple of years from now, you may not have to make huge trade-offs, or it might mean you've got to keep your current car running. But if you're goal is to become truly wealthy, you're going to make a lot more sacrifices. And it also depends on whether you have a contingency plan if investments don't work out as well as planned. And not many people planned on a 50% drop in 2007 and 2008. The less you spend more now, the more you'll have available to invest. Obvious, right? But on the other hand, the fewer contingency plans you have, the safer and lower return options you should consider. Because if you don't have many contingency plans, I would suggest you keep it safe. All right, second piece of that is your time horizon. Okay, if you need that money in a year, stick with very safe and liquid investments. You got to be able to get at it. The best might be a bond or a private mortgage loan with 1 year maturity. Or maybe an investment fund. Investing in short-term bonds, they don't fluctuate a lot. Back to that risk, that volatility. Or maybe even a one-year deposit in the bank. Oh, I hate saying that. I only recommend this last one if none of the others fit you. If you worry about real estate collapsing and the financial markets being closed next year, then maybe a one-year investment in the bank might make sense. But that hurts to even suggest it. For this one-year time horizon, here are some of the bad things to do. Hear about the worst things you can do to invest during that 1 year. Is you pick a single high-potential biotech stock, or you buy a car that you're going to sell in a year, or you buy a house that you're going to sell in a year, because you might not, and chances are that car will be worth less. How about a 30-year bond? Also not a good idea. They are going to change in price a lot. It could work out well, but I wouldn't count on it. Even an aggressive equity fund investment doesn't make sense with a short horizon. Each of these has a risk of declining in value during that 1 year. I can pretty much bet that car will if you bought one to resell. Or even may not be able to sell them when you need the money. like trying to sell a house today. This ability to sell in a short period of time is what we refer to as liquidity. I mentioned that liquidity risk before. Just in case you thought liquidity referred to investing in wines, which, by the way, is a totally different type of liquid investment. One important warning. If your time horizon is long, 10 to 15 years, let's say, or longer, you shouldn't be setting up your investments to have the highest one-year return this year and then reallocating for the highest one-year return next year. The best long-term returns are not generally the best sum of single-year returns. Let me use an example, and that might kind of make it click. What's one of the critiques that corporations very often get, publicly traded corporations? They're trying to build shareholder value, build your stock price by focusing on quarterly returns. That's fine this quarter, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do well in the long term. We'll talk about this risk and return concept a lot more in the future. If you want to do some reading on it, there's a lot of information on this risk-return curve. It's called the capital asset pricing model in the finance literature. So you can look that up if you want to do a little bit of research, or just stay tuned to the show for the next number of months. We'll talk more about that risk and return. So the time horizon is that second one. Now, here's one that's often overlooked, your current portfolio. You see, if you've got a good, well-diversified portfolio allocated across various asset classes, across various geographic regions, you're in a very different, let me call that a much better situation, than most investors who have randomly invested in what was at the time investment du jour. This favorable portfolio, this well-diversified one, actually you can, if anything, you might want to say, well, I'll put a little bit more into short-term assets because I'll need the money in a year, let's say. But you're in a much better situation to do a little adjustment. You'll be able to actually use that portfolio and pull out money at any point in time and not take a huge risk of any kind of loss. Now, if, on the other hand, you've got a portfolio concentrated, let's say, in one country's equities, and people do this all the time. They live in the U.S. and they say, well, I'm U.S. stocks, I'll be well diversified. Or when I lived in smaller countries, I mentioned Hungary earlier, somebody invested strictly in Hungarian stocks because that's what they knew. They were fully diversified in a market that was about 0.5% of the world's market. They were not diversified. They really had a high risk when things go bad in Hungary. So you can, if you're highly concentrated, you can improve your short-term returns and your long-term returns, and by the way, lower your risk by diversifying geographically and across asset classes. That current portfolio is pretty important. And back to that well-balanced portfolio. Let's say you now need 10% of your money in 1 year. Well, if you've got enough short-term investments, you just take that money out. If you don't have quite enough, you reallocate slightly from other ones. You might sell off a little bit of bonds. In essence, you leave the remaining 90% to grow in other long-term investments. Now, notice I did not say, and this is an important point I want to make, and we'll talk about this in a future show for sure. I didn't say take out 10% out of each of your asset classes. Because a lot of people say we have to keep your allocation intact. Bad idea. This concept has been described as the buckets of money concept, okay? And Ray Lucci is the key guy I credit with this concept. And he's a radio personality. He does run investment funds, but he probably is on the radio and television 2 hours a day or something like that. So I don't know how he finds time to do anything else. He's got a team that obviously manages the rest. He's written a number of books on this topic, buckets of money. If you happen to be able to catch one of his free seminars in a city near you, I highly recommend it. And I think he's actually going to be in the Phoenix area in the near future. I have been to his seminars in the past. I've met him. We talked. Since he and I think similarly, and we're both fans of having a significant portion of the portfolio in real estate, I thought he and I might be able to partner with some portfolios. Well, unfortunately, as you found when I've had tried to have guests on the show that are tied in with registered securities, they have a lot of restrictions. And Ray Lucci is no exception. He's bound by being only able to sell registered securities. He can't work with investments that are exempt from securities regulation, like the ones we deal with, or owning properties or private mortgage lending. Both are exempt from securities regulation. Anyway, back to Ray Lucia. He would tell you pulling a little money out of each bucket, in other words, some out of your money markets, some out of your bonds, some out of your long-term stocks, your aggressive stocks, your commodities, that will not work well. He calls it reverse dollar cost averaging. It's a good term. See, dollar cost averaging is good. I'll even say a great way to accumulate wealth. The reverse is real bad. See, many people assume that dollar cost averaging is actually one of the Ten Commandments. It's not. It's supported by a number of the commandments, but even though it's not one of the commandments, we will probably spend a show or a portion of a show talking about this concept. It really is important, and I do want you to take advantage of dollar cost averaging. Great way to build your portfolio. On to the next one, the most equal of the equal aspects of knowing thyself, risk preference. Now, when you listen to the show on April 11th of this year, 2011, or if you happen to listen to the archive, we covered the first commandment of investing. And by the way, I guess I should remind you, the archives are available on www.wealthdna.us, the name of this radio show, .us, wealthdna.us. In that first commandment, in that show, I shared a story about a young investor and his trip to Hawaii. If you listened to that story and felt uncomfortable about facing the prospect of a 20% drop in your assets in one day, this could be a sign you have a fairly low risk tolerance. Or another way you could test it is if after the market dropped 50% in 2007 and 2008, and you said, never again, I'll never invest in equities again. Again, a sign you have a fairly low risk tolerance. There's one more I'd share. If you sold your investments when they dropped in value, and then you refuse to buy them back until they're way up again, and violate the first commandment over and over again, there's a good indication you have a low risk tolerance. And I have some very simple advice. Stay out of the kitchen. You'd better stick with either lower risk allocation of your assets or let someone else make the investment decisions for you, somebody that's less emotional. Now, notice if you had that well-diversified portfolio, it didn't impact you so much. You didn't panic as much. You probably don't have as low a risk tolerance just because you've set up your portfolio properly. So it's important to know the real you. Pinstripe suits or gray suits, belts or suspenders. You can't get to know the person you'd like to be or feel you should be. You have to know who you really are. When that knot in your stomach says, I got to get out, and you do, at the bottom, that wasn't meant for you. Now, it is possible to change your risk tolerance. One of the ways is to have a well-diversified portfolio or getting somebody else to make the decisions, and all you do is kind of ask them dumb questions every once in a while. But it takes some time. And when I say time, I don't mean overnight. Now, the more knowledge you have about how the market dropped and rebounded in the past makes it easier to stay objective. Hopefully, just listening to the story of the first commandment made you realize that that major drop, 20%, was a great buying opportunity, not a selling opportunity. You see, emotions do not belong in investing. If you walk away with one concept, it's that one with risk. Emotions just don't belong there. Yes, you will lose money. The trick is to make more money than you lose. Now, for most investors, and whether they have a high risk tolerance or a low risk tolerance, the same principle applies. It just might be the shape will be different. But I use an approach or recommend the approach that's analogous to what we always use, the food pyramid. Do you remember that? By the way, if you've seen any of the literature, business cards, or websites, BI solutions, you'll notice the logo has that shape. Must be coincidence. Well, there's a base to that pyramid. That's the foundation. That's the group that you fill with this low-risk liquid investments. And that is the money markets. Ooh, I almost said CDs. The money markets, the short-term private mortgage loans, maybe even life insurance. But you don't start with things like currency derivatives or currency futures, any kind of derivatives, those kinds of things, okay? So your base is going to build on conservative things. Like I said, even life insurance. We talked about using that life insurance to borrow against. Stay away from things like hedge funds, currency futures, or derivatives until you've really got a base built. You probably want the other layers built as well. Now, once you have that solid investment base, that gives you that contingency fund, those rainy day funds. You now can tolerate risk a lot better than the average person. By the way, most young investors think because of their time horizon, they can take the risky stuff and make up for it over time. But if they run out of cash, when there's a margin call because they've really been risky, they can't recover. It's all gone. So anyway, that base is first part to be built. It helps you tolerate the risk of those higher return asset classes. And notice I've mentioned risk here a few times. I'm specifically referring to volatility, which we talked about. Now, I'm not going to cover every aspect of getting to know thyself. Well, I guess I should mention the other layers a little bit. So the first one would be the very kind of low-risk stuff. After you've built that, that gives you a ability to build the next layer, which would be things like bonds, a little bit longer-term maturity. It could be multiple-year private mortgage loans, those kinds of things, maybe even stocks that earn a dividend. And let me go back. Maybe I use the analogy of the food pyramid. When you have the food pyramid, what do you eat first if you only had money to buy a little bit? Do you buy dessert? Do you buy wine? No, you'd buy meat or fish, vegetables. Those are the important ones. That's your base. So think of it just like the food pyramid. What's the stuff I need to have in case I don't have enough? Once you have that in place, that you can eat meat and vegetables regularly every day, you now can start thinking about adding some of the other aspects. And once you have money to buy all of them, fine, but you're still going to eat your vegetables and fish and meat first, not your sweets. So you stick with the staples first and then the dessert. And by the way, when you're selling them and consuming them, that's what I referred to earlier in the buckets of money. That food pyramid works again. When I need the money, I start with the base. I pull it out of there. I don't start with dessert. All right, so some interesting analogies with that food pyramid I hadn't thought about, but we'll use it also in the buckets of money. Anyway, I want to keep it a little bit shorter today because this is an important commandment. So I'd like to kind of summarize it using a different way, using the Wealth DNA framework. Okay, so let's go back to the Wealth DNA framework. I already mentioned that D is for desire, right? And DNA is an acronym. It's the three main obstacles to becoming truly wealthy. So let's use the Wealth DNA framework to kind of summarize the second commandment. D is for desire. How do you know if you really want to be wealthy? You think you do, and yet do you create your own obstacles along the way, like selling when the market's down? Or are there sayings you've heard when you were growing up that are so prominent in your mind that you really can't move ahead? Subconsciously, you're sabotaging yourself. Terms like filthy rich. Is anybody squeaky clean rich? Why do we use the term filthy rich or stinking rich? And if you have those stuck in your subconscious, you're going to sabotage yourself. Or how about the people that you hang around with? Are they sabotaging your success? Are they dragging you down? Are they telling you it'll never work? It can't work. It just, you know, nobody else has ever made money in stocks. Why do you think you can? Nobody makes money in real estate. Look how many lost. Maybe they're sabotaging your success. Are you willing to make the sacrifices to build your wealth in the future? Those sacrifices today, tomorrow, and next week. Those are all part of the desire. That's getting to know yourself. Real important. If you really say that the second commandment deals with that desire piece. But it also provides some knowledge, and that's the N, knowledge. And most of you know that some of the English professors and teachers and literature types will tell you that knowledge doesn't start with an N, it starts with a K. Well, okay, if they want to call it knowledge, let them do it. I call it knowledge. So that's the N in wealth DNA. Do you know the four aspects that help you define who you are and how to invest? Well, today you learned them. Your investment goals, your time horizon, your current portfolio, and your risk preferences. They help you move forward. Now, have you defined those investment goals? Nice to talk about. Have you done it? What are your time horizons that you're investing for? Is the 1 year out or 20 years out? Now, how does your current portfolio stack up on diversification? Is all of your financial investments in the U.S.? Are they all in bonds? Are they all in stocks? That's not diversified. And are you taking appropriate advantage of the volatility that's been happening and will probably continue for months to come? So you could have a diversified portfolio, and yet you're not allowing for going down and making money when stocks go down or bonds go down, which they will. Not necessarily in the short term, but they will. Do you know how to invest if you have a low risk tolerance? You willing to give the decision-making to an advisor who can stay calm, even with 3-5% market swings? In other words, stay out of the kitchen if you can't. How about the action piece? That's the A in wealth DNA. If a 5% drop in the market has you staring at the stock charts like deer in headlights, then that's not the way you should be investing. Now, if on the other hand, a 5% drop means you take profits on some of your short positions and now start putting money into long positions to take advantage of the uptick, and they do happen, then you're doing some of the right stuff. You're taking the right kind of action. You're taking advantage of volatility. Sounds like you've gotten to know yourself if you're able to do those things. You've been able to overcome some of those internal obstacles that say it's going down, I should be selling. And by the way, let me remind you, very important on this action bullet, risk or volatility, same thing, works both ways, up and down. If your portfolio is totally dependent on appreciation of stocks, bonds, commodities, whatever, you'll likely be disappointed, and disappointed often. You have to be able to take advantage of decreases, too, because they will happen. And as a matter of fact, in the future, you'll see that is one of the Ten Commandments. Incidentally, some of you may be wondering, and so I did a little math over the week because I haven't had a chance to take a look at it. You may be wondering, with my focus on real estate, because that's what our business is mostly involved in, do I really know about investing in financial markets or enough to be able to giving you some useful advice? And secondly, do I walk the talk? In other words, do I practice what I preach? Or do I talk about investing in the financial markets with the hope of scaring you away and moving into real estate? I don't know, whatever thoughts you might have. Well, let me share, I really do walk the talk. I have a significant portion of my portfolio in the financial markets. Why? Because I believe in diversification. I do believe in real estate, and I do believe long-term in the financial markets, and I know there is money to be made. So I thought I'd do some computation here, and I did the ones on the easy part where I'm not moving money in and out on a regular basis. That makes it kind of tricky, and that's something I will, by the way, I'm putting together a template. John had asked me for a template, and I will put that together. I just been a little bit stalled with other priorities. A template that helps you keep track of how you've been doing or how you are doing, so you can do this computation pretty easily or regularly, and you know what's going on with your portfolio. Okay, so I will put that together in the coming weeks. But I put my own numbers together. 2009, the S&P 500 rose an absolutely fantastic 23.5%. Great year. Unexpectedly, right out of the bottom of March, when everybody was worried about the world ending, the market shot up 23.5% that year, and that includes a drop in the first part of the year. The portion of my portfolio in the financial markets was up just over 40%. So I guess I outperformed a little. Well, you can't do that every year. So in 2010, the stock market rose, still a very respectable 12.8. It's not unusual for the market when it shoots up the next year to have about half of that return. Well, the portion of my portfolio in financials, in the financial markets, was up just over 20%. So again, I did pretty well. This year, I'm actually underperforming slightly, and I've got to kind of take a look at somewhere in that second quarter something I did wasn't the right thing to do. And I'll re-look at it. And I do have my portfolio shifting quite a bit to much more conservative, and it's been doing the right thing, but evidently not quickly enough. So this year, underperforming slightly. See, the S&P is down 7.1% this year. Yeah, it's been up real nice, and this year it's down 7.1% as of Friday. My portfolio, the financial investment-type portion of it, is down 8.6%. I was too optimistic earlier in the year. I did extremely well at the beginning, and then when the things started changing, the Greek tragedy started to evolve, and I think we'll see an ending in the next few months. Well, the market started to drop, and there's a lot of panic in the streets. And I've written some articles. I want to get them out published, but nonetheless, I've written to a number of people my concerns on the banking sector. Some of the bankers, of course, can't respond. But on that, I'm concerned that it's deja vu all over again, that the market will be in for some major drops. So I am adding to my short positions. That, of course, hasn't helped when the market ticks up. We also covered this investing pyramid today. Now, I'm not referring to pyramid schemes. I'm talking about building a base of lower-risk investments that help you deal with short-term cash needs. They're liquid. They give you a stable base to start investing in dividend-paying stocks, and maybe longer-term private mortgage loans, as I mentioned. All right, so that's the base. First, get that built. I mentioned life insurance in there. You say, well, that's not liquid. Well, it is if you set it up properly. As I mentioned, you can take a loan against that insurance policy if you need the cash, and that loan is very cheap money. The insurance policy is still in place. Let me remind you, the next Wealth DNA radio show is the fourth Monday of September. Fourth Monday, and that's September 26th, 8 o'clock Arizona time. Same place, same time. Look forward to seeing you on the radio. Now, I haven't set up the topic or a guest yet, so suggestions are welcome. Things have been a little bit hectic back here, so some of this has taken a back seat time-wise and obviously was pulling this together. Well, I knew the topic. I didn't have a chance to pull this together at all until yesterday. Now, for those of you that were planning to join us at our next Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar, I have bad news. We've canceled this week's seminar. We'll be scheduling one in October. We haven't picked the date and the time. And by the way, again, suggestions welcome. If you haven't been able to make one and there are certain days or certain times that work for you and others don't, let us know. We'll gladly set up various times. And that's part of our goal, is to have different times, different days of the week to accommodate more people. But in the meantime, feel free to call me or send me an email to schedule a meeting. I'll even show you how to make money investing in real estate without buying, selling, or renting a single property. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, it can be done. It is possible. And by the way, since you're not renting, you don't have to deal with the four T's most landlords hate. If you're wondering what those are, they're tenants, toilets, trash, and termites. The four T's, the things that landlords often give up after a while. If you haven't received emails reminding you about the show, send an email to ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. The second commandment is to get to know thyself. So let's close by just saying, get to know yourself and happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ronald, Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.